Stavanger said. Humphrey's place is a different matter. He turned to the phone and asked it to connect him with Martin Humphreys.
Dr. Cardenas? Martin Humphreys said to Stavanger's image on his patio wall screen. You mean the scientist? Yes, said Stavanger, looking strained. She's missing. Humphreys got up from his chaise lounge in which he'd been reclining while he reviewed his father's holdings in Libya. I don't understand, he said to Stavanger's image, trying to look puzzled. Why are you telling me about this? The security office has initiated a search for her throughout Cellini. I'd appreciate it if you allowed them to search your premises as well. My home? It's just a formality, Mr. Humphreys, Stavanger said with an obviously false smile. You know security types. They want to dot every I and cross every T. Yes, I suppose they do, Humphreys replied, smiling back. I suppose someone could hide out in the gardens, couldn't they? Or inside the house. It's rather large. Yes, I suppose it is, by Cellini's standards. He took a breath, then said reluctantly, Very well, let them send a team down here. I have no objections. Thank you, sir. You're welcome, said Humphreys. He snapped his fingers to shut down the connection. Then he went into the house, walking swiftly to his office. He snapped his fingers as he entered the office. The phone screen lit up. Get Blylevin down here on the double. I've got a job for him.
Mare Nubium.
The tractor plodded slowly along the bleak, empty expanse of Mare Nubium, heading away from the ringwall mountains that marked Alphonsus and the site of Cellini. Chris Cardenas fought to keep the terror from overcoming her. She could feel it, trembling deep inside her, crawling up into her throat, making her heart race so hard she could hear its pulse thundering in her ears. Where are you taking me? She asked, her voice muffled by the helmet of the spacesuit they had put her into. No response from the driver. Of course, Cardenas thought, they've disabled my suit's radio. A neat, high-tech way of gagging me. The two goons who had picked her up the night before had brought her down to Humphrey's extravagant place in Cellini's lowest level. Martin Humphreys had not deigned to meet her, but she knew whose place it was. The servants had been very polite, offering her food and drink, and showing her to a comfortable guest suite where she'd spent the night. The door to the corridor had been locked, of course. She was a prisoner, and she knew it, no matter how sumptuous her cell. Strangely, she slept well. But thinking over the situation the next morning, after a maid had brought a breakfast tray into her sitting room, Cardenas reasoned that Humphreys was going to murder her. He'll have to, she thought. He can't let me go and let me tell everyone that he's killed Dan Randolph. With my help, he added silently. I'm an accomplice to murder. A blind, stupid, stubborn fool who didn't see what she didn't want to see. Not until it was too late. And now I'm going to be murdered, too. Why else would they be taking me all the way out into the godforsaken wilderness? The thought of being killed frightened her, intellectually, in the front lobe of her brain. But being outside, on the surface of the moon, out in the deadly vacuum, with all the radiation sleeting in from deep space, out here where humans were never meant to be, that terrified her deep in her guts. This tired little tractor had no pressurized cabin, no crew module. You had to be in a spacesuit to survive for a minute out here. This is a dead world, she thought as she looked through her helmet visor. The gray ground was absolutely dead, except for the cleated trails of other tractors that had come this way. No wind or weather would disturb those prints. They would remain in place until the moon crumbled. Behind them, a lazy rooster tail of dust floated in the soft lunar gravity. And beyond that, nothing but the gently undulating plain of barren rock pockmarked with craters, some the size of finger pokes, some big enough to swallow the tractor, rocks strewn everywhere like the playroom toys of careless children. The horizon was too close. It made Cardenas feel even jumpier. It felt wrong, dangerous. In the airless vacuum there was no haze, no softening with distance. That abrupt horizon slashed across her field of view like the edge of a cliff. She saw that the ringwall mountains of Alphonsus were almost below the horizon behind them. Where are we going? She asked again, knowing it was useless.
Beside her, Frank Blylevin was no longer smiling. He sweated inside his spacesuit as he drove the tractor. When he'd made his deal with Martin Humphreys, it had been for nothing more serious than allowing Humphreys to tap into Astro Corporation's communications net. A good chunk of money for practically no risk. Now he was ferrying a kidnapped woman, a Nobel scientist, for the Lord's sweet sake. Humphreys was going to have to pay extra for this. Blylevin had to admit, though, that Humphreys had smarts. Stavanger wants to search for Dr. Cardenas? Okay. Who better to spirit her out of Cellini for a while than the head of Astro's security department? Nobody asked any questions when he showed up at the garage, already suited up with another space-suited person alongside him. Gotta inspect the communications antennas out on the Nubium, he told the guard, checking out the tractors. We'll be out about 6 hours. Sure enough, 3 hours into his aimless wandering across the desolate mare, he got a radio signal from Humphrey's people. Okay, bring her back. Smiling again, he leaned his helmet against Cardenas's so she could hear him through sound conduction. We're going back now, he said. They'll have a team to meet you. Now you behave yourself when we get to the garage.
Chris Cardenas felt a huge surge of gratitude well up inside her. We're going back. We'll be safe once we're back inside. Then she realized that she was still Humphrey's prisoner, and she wasn't really safe at all.
Dan felt simmering anger as he watched George's report on the wall screen of the ship's wardroom.
I was in on the search of Humphrey's place. It's big enough to hide a dozen people. We didn't find Dr. Cardenas.
Or any trace of her, George ended morosely. She must still be alive, then, Dan said. Then he blew out an impatient huff of breath as he realized that George wouldn't hear his words for another 20 minutes or so. Pancho was sitting beside him in the wardroom, looking more puzzled than worried as George's image faded from the wall screen. If they haven't found her body, Dan said to her, it means she's probably still alive.
Or they stashed the corpse outside, Pancho suggested.
Dan nodded glumly.
Why would Humphreys want to kill Dr. Cardenas? Pancho asked.
Because she found out something that she wanted to tell me. Something that Humphreys doesn't want me to know.
What?
How should I know? Dan snapped. Pancho grinned lamely. Yeah, I guess that was a pretty dumb question. Dan rubbed his chin, muttering, Humphreys knew the security people were coming to search his place, so he just moved her somewhere else until the search was over. I'll bet a ton of diamonds she's back inside his house now. He'll want to keep her close.
Probably, Pancho agreed.
I wish there was a way we could get somebody into Humphrey's place without him knowing it, Dan mused. Pancho sat up straighter. There he is, she said, with a sly smile. George counted it as a sign of Doug Stavanger's respect for Dr. Cardenas that he agreed to a private meeting.
Invisible, Stavanger looked shocked. A cloak of invisibility.
I know it sounds nutty, George said, but Dan told me that...
It's not nutty, Stavanger murmured, steepling his fingers before his face. I'm stunned, though, that Ike Walton told anyone about it.
You mean it's real? A cloak of invisibility?
Stavanger eyed the big Aussie from behind his desk. Ah, it's real, all right. But I doubt that it comes in your size. We're going to have to put the loose-lipped Mr. Walton back to work.
The worst part about this, Dan fumed silently, is being so far apart that we can't talk in real time. He had paced the length of the crew module several times, from the bridge where Pancho and Amanda chatted amiably while monitoring the ship's highly automated systems, to the sensor bay at the far end of the passageway, where Fuchs was bent over the sample of superconducting wire. George's last message had an almost fairy tale quality to it. Stavanger's got the guy who made the cloak enlarging it to fit me. He's over in the nanotech lab now doing it. He says I'll be able to sneak into Humphrey's place sometime tomorrow morning if he doesn't run into any snags. Rumpelstiltskin, Dan thought as he prowled along the passageway. No, he was the guy who spun straw into gold. Who had the cloak of invisibility? Pancho, he answered himself. Of all the sneaky con artists in the solar system, She's the one who comes up with a cloak of invisibility.